Are you an entrepreneur looking for more free time, more money, or just looking for that success blueprint? The Proven Entrepreneur is the podcast for you. Host Don Williams and his guests share real success stories from proven entrepreneurs. Here's your host, Don Williams.
Hey, Don Williams here with today's episode of the Proven Entrepreneur Show. My guest, local Fort Worth luminary, long-term business, Doug Renfro with Mrs. Renfro's.
Thanks for having me, and I assume luminary is the light coming off my forehead.
No, it just means that wherever you go, there's a bright light around you, wherever you go. So tell us about Mrs. Renfro's. You're in the salsa business.
We are.
Yes, and have been in the salsa business for longer than a week or two, I think.
A couple of years. Yeah, we're an 81-year-old family business, very evolutionary. When my dad was a kid, they made syrup. When I was a kid, we just did Southern relishes, and then we got into taco sauce in the 70s, and now we are the largest independent brand of salsa in the United States.
So multiple pivots along the way. Mrs. Renfro was your...
Grandmother.
Your grandmother. And the first product that she put on the market was?
They actually started, if you go north on Main toward Jyoti Garcia's in Fort Worth, you'll see a building on the side called the Vintage Building. It's been nicely restored. I have a photo outside my office of my granddad in the 30s in his vintage company car. So he was distributing grocery items like flavored vinegars, garlic strips, different things. And 1940, made it through the Depression and thought, you know, I'm just go out on my own and do this. So they started in the garage in 1940. For 12 years, they just did that, distributed grocery items. In 52, they started making syrup. And I like to say there were no maple trees harmed.
No maple trees harmed. Okay. And so how many salsa brands? I think you told me, but I forgot. How many salsa brands that most people would recognize?
I mean, there's over 800 tracked in the nation, which seems ridiculous. You know, as far as what's popular, what people know about nationwide, there's a good 100 or 200. We're fortunate in that half of what we do is make things for other people. So I could take you to a grocery store and normally show you 3 to 7 other brands that we make, and not always salsa. We also do bean dip, cheese sauce, barbecue sauce, relish. We've done some ethnic condiments. So as long as it'll fit our technical parameters, we'll give it a shot.
Got it. So basically someone's white labeling, you're the manufacturer and their label.
Yeah. In those cases, many times it's their recipe. We make it for them. Many times we created the recipe for them. We do a lot of grocery store chain items where they come to us and ask, what should we do to have a private label salsa, cheese sauce? And I'll suggest things based on what I'm seeing in the market. They'll pick a few. We'll either create a recipe or use a library we created earlier in non-competitive space. And so I could take you around the country, actually around the world to some places, and show you this really cool label, this jar that looks nothing like us, has nothing about Texas or Renfro. It's actually our recipe. And in many cases, we've been making those 10, 20, or 30 years.
Oh, wow. So your grandmother started the business.
My grandparents together.
Grandparents, yeah. Started the business. Then your father took over the business.
My dad and my uncle were 50-50 partners when my granddad... Actually, my granddad, he was smart. He didn't have a lot of formal education, but when he incorporated, he kept 52% and gave them each 24%. So if things went south, he could fire them still. And when he passed away in 75, my grandmother gradually gifted more and more to my dad and my uncle. So, but they were... My dad's what I call allergic to sales. He liked production. He detested anything administrative or sales and marketing oriented. And my uncle was marketing, accounting, everything else. And then my two cousins came back earlier than I did, although I was there before they were, because every summer since sixth grade, I did the nastiest jobs we had to make $5 a day initially. And then they had to pay me minimum wage when I turned 16. And in college, I mixed all the spices and then went to get my bachelor's degree, lived at home, had a really interesting smelling Subaru with cumin and garlic notes, and got the heck out of there and went to work for, you know, Ross Perot's company for 7 years after college when he sold it to General Motors, you know, wear a coat and tie. Car did not smell like garlic. But, you know, I probably told you corporate jobs will just suck the soul out of your body. So I've been back 29 years. So my two cousins and myself run the company currently, and we still pay my dad to come to lunch with us occasionally and share lots of info with him and get his input on things.
So, true American family business.
Very much so, yeah. Third generation. Fourth generation, we always told them, you've got to go to college, graduate, and work somewhere real for a couple of years and come back if you wanted to go up the management route. And several of them are really smart and successful, and they already make more than double what we could pay them as a management trainee. And the others, like my three children, I always said, chase your path. Don't chase the dollar and you'll be very happy. And they're very happy. And they live in LA, New York, and North Carolina. So no interest in the business.
Yeah. Yeah. I have a good friend whose grandfather started a construction company, built it to about $500 million, pretty nice construction company. Next generation didn't do so well. The grand boys run it now. But from the very beginning, there was always a rule. You must go out and work 10 years somewhere else before you can come back to the business.
I think it's a great rule. I was gone 7 or 8 years.
Yeah, awesome. And you were with?
It was EDS.
EDS.
When I was hired, then that became acquired by General Motors.
Okay, awesome. And so you obviously grew up in an entrepreneurial family. Okay, your grandparents.
My dad's 84. He's never had another job. He's always worked for the family business.
Never had.
My uncle, who passed away 6 months ago, he was in the Army for 2 years after college and never had another job other than the family business.
So. Okay, so the both gentlemen are kind of my hero, okay, that never had a real job other than the Army. You know, we'll overlook that. So went to school, and your degree is in?
My undergrad was finance. When I got to EDS, they said there's this new thing called a CMA, which was a certified management accountant, sort of CPA for industry. They said, go get one of those, which was 5 4-hour written exams at the time. So that took a couple of years, did that. And then they said, that was cool. Now go get an MBA. So I went to SMU at night and on the weekend for 3 years and got my MBA because I lived in Plano at the time in Dallas. I started at their headquarters at Forest Lane and then was at their headquarters in Plano and around that area. So did that. And then we started having kids and I would call my wife and say, by the way, she was teaching. I said, I'm going to be in Vancouver the rest of the week. You know, this is not really conducive to family life. And of course, I was working 60, 70 hour weeks.
Sure.
Just because that was the environment. And great training, smart people, had a great time, made decent money. But again, just unfortunately, I was really good at things that bore me to tears, like policy and procedure. I just want to kill myself. So I like doing things and being involved and being in the thick of things, product development, the marketing. Yeah, I just love all of that. And it's so fun and satisfying on a daily basis to do it and have your grandmother looking at you on the side of the jar.
Yeah, that's awesome. So tell me this, out of all of that history, is there a hard lesson, something you can share with us today that was painful at the time, but in retrospect, turns out that it was very positive?
I'm sure there were no more than several hundred of those. It's always a journey. You're always learning. One of the things I always try to tell my kids is that it's amazing how many times in life you want something really badly. And had you gotten it, looking back, it would have been a disaster. So, you know, not getting a lot of things was good. Having to wait, you know, the delayed gratification was very much there in the family business because we're a small company, but we were tiny when I came back and we couldn't afford anything. So we didn't have an accounting system for the first 12 years I came back, and I had been in charge of accounting system for a $1 billion company. So that was weird, but I didn't know anything, you know, about the trade show marketing, getting into grocery stores, developing new products. So I had plenty to keep me on without having that, but we've had excitement. We've had our largest customer at the time go Chapter 11. That was neat. The fun thing is we're very persistent. I will always say that persistence and tenacity are more important than intelligence. You can't be a moron, but it's more important to be tenacious. And we got with a local bankruptcy attorney who was really sharp, worked an 8-year deal with the customer. They owed us $1 million at the time. This is public record. We got all of it back over the next 8 years. They stayed in business. We've done 2-3-year renewals. They're still a major customer. They're still a major brand, and everybody won, which you don't hear a lot when your largest customer goes Chapter 11. That's not normally happy news.
Not normally happy news. Yeah. So awesome. So what about a golden nugget? Something from your history that you could share with our listeners that would be a nugget of wisdom from the mind of Doug Renfrew?
To me, it's just never pass up a networking opportunity. The amount that we've learned from others. And my uncle taught me early on, because when I came back, he had been at the company half a century, but he didn't have any experience with food distributors, which was the newer channel we were going into. So he only had like an 18-month head start on me with some of these. And so he and I would go to trade shows and we'd go to the happy hour at the end of the day and just stand there looking like the rubes from Texas that we were, being very nice and gracious and asking questions like, what does this mean? You know, what's an MSRP? What's an OI? What's a bill back? Does Walmart really want this? And how does that work? And people will tell you all kinds of things if you're nice and you're pleasant and not a direct competitor. And it's amazing how many times I've gone into a situation like that, maybe to trade show, and I'm not comfortable. I don't know anybody. And I was like, I'd rather go back to my room and watch Netflix, which of course they didn't have at the time. But if I will stand in there for about 10 minutes and strike up one conversation, by the end of it, I've met several key people, some of whom I'll, you know for the next 30 years. And I love connecting. I love being able to help you. You call me and I can't solve your problem, but I can get you closer to it. I know somebody who might be able to solve it. If I can just help connect you, you'll have a warm fuzzy when you think of me for the rest of your life. And
No doubt. I think that's a great nugget. Ask. You know, if you're an entrepreneur and you want to know something, just start asking. Other entrepreneurs want to help. And it's typically because we had help somewhere along the way.
Exactly.
And we want to give back.
I do a ton of mentoring. People send people to me. Like, would you answer some questions for them? Would you teach this class? Would you help here? And I'll always, shamelessly, I'll take salsa, obviously, for everybody. But I spoke to a TCU family business class last week. I'm speaking to an ethics class tomorrow. I'm being flown to Chicago in a couple of weeks to speak at a trade show about selling as David in the world of Goliaths. You know, anything I can do to share the gospel of salsa, I'll do that.
There you go. So tell us a little bit about selling as David in a world of Goliaths. I think you told me you're number 8.
Now, yes.
Number 8 now. When you first started out, you were obviously not number 8.
When I came back to the business, I would take our product to parties and people would say, that's delicious. Where can I buy it? And I would say, you can't. We were in Milwaukee and Napa and a farmer's market in one suburb. And just, it was very spastic and random distribution. And, it was rough early on. My uncle and I, and then my uncle and myself and my sales director and my cousin, we would go to a show and just be told no. Repeatedly. Twice a year, we would go to a show where there were food distributors from around the country and they would ring a bell. Like every 9 minutes, they rang the bell and you would change tables. And we would talk to 27 distributors in little 9 minute segments, trying to convince them to carry our line. And many times they would laugh sort of derisively, like, not only are we not going to carry it, we never will. They didn't like our label at the time. We didn't have much presence. But back to that tenacity and persistence, we just kept smiling our way and being nicing them to death. And finally, my salesman and I were up in Boston in this one market. I mean, it's one of the better retailers up there. She basically said, you nice boys from Texas, you do have interesting products, because we were early innovators. We created black bean salsa and habanero sauce at a value price when nobody else had it in the nation. And they said, your products are good. Your label's kind of ugly, but you're nice. Let's give it a shot. And what happens is one retailer gives you a shot in an area. Their competitors look to see what they're doing. And if it does well, they'll copy it. And over about a 3 or 5 year period, you slowly sell every retailer up there. And then you go to another area and repeat.
Right. But the trick is getting in that first store.
Oh, that first one's brutal.
Yeah. So I think I remember the first time I met you, you were speaking at, I think, a Biz Owners Ed event. And you talked about going to a trade show, maybe in Canada. And I remember you sharing something, maybe with a sombrero and...
No, I dressed up as a Canadian Mountie.
Oh, as a Canadian Mountie.
Yeah.
A different kind of hat. And so talk to us about unconventional marketing methods you've deployed at Mrs. Renfro's.
I mean, my two statements that I always tell people sound like they're contradictory, but they're not, is to build a brand, you've got to be a massive narcissist and not have an ego. What I mean is you've got to do whatever it takes. You've got to be willing to be kicked in the head repeatedly, told that you're stupid and ugly, and just smile and keep going. And I flew from Fort Worth, Texas. I flew to Canada with a Canadian Mountie costume and wore that thing all day during multiple days of the trade show, looked like a moron. But everybody that came in, they would say, you got to check out the idiot from Texas in the Mountie costume. And we got our biggest sale of the show. I got vendor of the year, and it's not about the little bald guy with glasses. Nobody cares about that. It's about forcing the salsa and the brand in their face. So, as long as I get a little trophy and people are thinking about the salsa, I'm happy. And then I always comment that we're not big enough to do, guerrilla marketing. So we do orangutan marketing. We send product to TV and movie sets, knowing 99% of the time we're just feeding the crew, which is fine. I'm very fortunate that everybody's a potential consumer with what we do. And my buddy that sells Cadillacs never gives out samples. we give them out all the time because the cleaning crew, you know, somebody's going to use it or they're going to sell it on eBay. I don't really care as long as somebody eats it and is happy. So you will occasionally get lucky. And some little independent film crew in Austin asked for product, didn't know who they were. Nobody else did either. But they made a little film that turned into $100 million blockbuster Spy Kids. And there's a scene where they open a shelf and it's full of these jars of food, none of which has a real label except Mrs. Renfro's green salsa. And somebody had lovingly, carefully positioned it to the camera and it was on the big screen. People called me and like, I think I just saw your product in a movie. And they did. And we asked, you know, how much would it cost to be in the sequel? And it was a $50,000 placement fee because they had become such a runaway star. And we are not in the sequel, by the way. Then we had 10 years later, I did it with Big Bang Theory. Somebody called me to have product on Pretty Little Liars. I'd never heard of that. My daughter said it was a real show. But I said, when I saw the address at Warner Brothers, I said, I watch Big Bang Theory. He said, well, that set decorator's a friend of mine. Send extra. I'll give it to him. 8 months later, you never hear anything. And 8 months later, I'm sitting there watching TV with my wife and daughter. There's our tequila salsa. So it's a product I conceived of on my favorite show. And it was there 3 episodes and it moved to the island for 2 more. So 5 shows in a row, it's there. That show's in syndication. My grandkids will be showing their friends about that. You know, I said, you could have killed me that day. I would have been fine.
Well, other mountains to climb.
Subsequently, I did find other things to live for.
Yeah, there you go. So I love that. So that was almost casting bread upon the waters. You know, sending salsa complimentary to movie and TV sets.
And you'll be amazed 99% of the times I've done that. I don't ever know what happened to it. Most films never make it out of the can. There's all kinds of failures out there. We sent one, Stephen King did a movie set in a grocery store. And I thought, well, that's a natural. And then later on, I thought, well, what if they used it as a murder weapon? Could go south. But
yeah, could go. So any other out-of-the-box marketing method you've tried?
You know, our current ad agency taught us the power of Instagram and Facebook. Our former ad agency taught us that they existed and was there in the evolutionary stages. Now, you know, we've got little fancy videos on Instagram and things. But what's more interesting to me is the organic stuff. If you go to YouTube and put in Renfro Habanero Salsa, there's a full-on music video from 3 people in Canada we've never met. And it's got a bouncing cat above the lyrics. They're clearly in a grocery store, illegally filming, I'm sure. We only know it's Canada because the label's in French and English. And it's a song about our habanero salsa. At the end of it, a guy rubs it all over his face. And watching it, I'm pretty sure it's real. I know what it looks like. Little things like that. Or you go put in Ghost Pepper Renfro into YouTube, and there's all these guys who have paid or bet their friends like $500. You can't drink the whole bottle of Renfro Ghost Pepper without having milk or something. And they don't always make it. It's not always pretty, but it's free advertising. We had nothing to do with it in these cases. And I think that's something that, you know, couldn't have happened 20 years ago. The technology wasn't there, or it would have been horrendously expensive.
I think today, you know, for the first time in history, you can be your own media channel. Mm-hmm. And if you're in business, you probably ought to be. And I don't care if you're a law firm or a salsa manufacturer, you should be competing for eyeballs and eardrums every day. Because they're out there to be had. And when people will do it for you, that's just the best. Okay, so you mentioned the Carolina Reaper. That's the one that is like really, really, really hot.
It's really hot. The friend of mine who created that and at the time held the world record with Guinness for that being the hottest pepper, he was on Netflix last year on an episode about crazy. It was a series about crazy contests. And they had a whole episode on his Carolina Reaper eating contest he does in the Carolinas. And those people are insane. They give them a five-gallon bucket beside them because it's going to go south for most of the tasters. Yeah, I don't eat that. It's our number one item on Amazon by far because people who want something that specific really want it. They don't care what it costs, and it's difficult to find in the stores. So out of 30 Renfro items, it's probably number 21 in the grocery stores for us nationwide, but it's number one on Amazon and by quite a bit.
Yeah, well, that's a good place to be number one.
We could have brought some for you to taste.
Not live, you couldn't. Not live.
That would have been the end of your questions.
not live, you couldn't. I have tasted. It is very hot.
And we don't put that much in there, mainly because we can't afford to. It's a very expensive pepper. And also, you'd only sell one jar. Yeah. I've always told people, we're not about the macho sauce. We don't want you to dip, you know, a toothpick in it see Jesus and never eat it again. We need you to eat the whole jar and eat another whole jar next week.
Come back and get another one. Yeah, absolutely. So any thought you'd share for a young aspiring entrepreneur?
I think that comment about tenacity, persistence over education. You know, my granddad, I think, graduated eighth grade. We're not positive. And I always point out to people, you know, I'm not an entrepreneur. My dad was not an entrepreneur. My grandfather wasn't one, you know, that was brave enough to say, ooh, I made it through the Depression. I know, let's quit our job and start something out of the garage. You know, that's a different mentality. And I've been fortunate to be surrounded by thousands of them in my life and my journey. But, you know, it takes a lot of gumption to do that. But the number one thing I've seen with all the successful ones is this persistence. Yeah. Because they will get kicked in the head just repeatedly, told their idea is stupid. And even internally, you know, the first two products I got to create, one was habanero, and I was told at the time, it'll be cute because it's so hot, but we'll never sell much, obviously. And it's our number one item for 15 years now. But, you know, if you believe in what you're trying to achieve, you got to keep your head down, don't be obnoxious, but be persistent and keep going. And when you're wrong, you'll know.
Yeah.
The world will update you.
Yeah, love that. Well, I think there's real truth in that. And so pivot maybe, but we're not quitting.
Be very nimble. And yeah. Definitely. Yeah, I thought pomegranate chipotle was a great idea. Nobody seemed to agree with it. I mean, you know, we'd sell like 30,000 jars a year or something, but that it wasn't enough to be able to keep it going. So
yeah.
I think within the last 5 years, we've discontinued 9 or 10 items. I'm trying to be a grown-up. And SKU rationalization is harder when you create the recipes. It's sort of like your babies. But it's something we have to do because the big retailers are not going to give us 30 facings. They're not going to give us 30 jars wide of Renpro. So the key is to sell more of what you have. And if they really like something, get behind it.
One of my companies used to work with a French-Canadian office supply manufacturer. They would come out with about 100 SKUs a year. Mm. Okay. And they're selling to people like Office Depot and Staples and Walmart. But it was interesting in dealing with them because they really only believed in maybe 5 or 6. And so they'd put money and effort in the 5 or 6 and trying to launch those. The other 100 that was more of a soft launch, but they knew how to cut their losses. Said, yeah, this stands a chance, that doesn't. Of course, that's a little bit of predicting the future, so you never know. But
it's amazing how many aspects of life the 80-20 rule works.
Yeah.
And the customers that we're in, 80-20 works. The SKUs that we have, yeah, we have 30 items. The top 5 are half the sales. Everybody, I don't care if they make mustard, salad dressing, pickles, whatever, I guarantee you 80-20 works.
Yeah. And in some industries, even 90-10 now.
Scary, but yeah.
Scary, but true. Doug, thank you so much for joining us today. It's been a pleasure. And folks, you can find Mrs. Renfro's almost everywhere. And I encourage you to go get some today.
And if you can't find it, please make a big scene and scream and yell about it.
And call Doug. He'll take care of it.
Thanks again.
Thank you.
That's today's episode of The Proven Entrepreneur. Go to provenentrepreneurshow.com, subscribe to the show, leave an iTunes review, and you could win a $25,000 VIP day in Dallas with Don himself. And get Don's easier and faster selling with video course free. Please join Don on the next episode of The Proven Entrepreneur.